Reading with your kids.
Hola, ni hao, konnichiwa, assalamu alaikum, shalom, jambo, bienvenidos. Hi, my name is Jed Lee, and this is the Reading with Your Kids podcast. We are coming to you from the beautiful neighborhood of Reedville in the southwest corner of Boston, Massachusetts. Please be sure to subscribe to the show on the iHeartRadio app, on Google Podcasts, Apple Podcasts, wherever you find your podcast. Please grab your kids because right now it's time for another sneak preview of Solve It for Kids.
This is Solve It for Kids.
Hello, hello, hello. So great to see you. Come on in. Hi, my name is Jed Lee, and this is Solve It for Kids, a brand new podcast that will give kids and families a peek into the real world of scientists, engineers, and experts as they solve problems in their jobs using curiosity, critical thinking, and creativity. Please welcome to the show my co-host, my partner in exploration, the dean of all things STEM and STEAM, Jennifer Swanson. Hey, Jennifer, great to see you.
Great to see you too, Jed. I'm so thrilled for today's episode.
I'm really psyched too. I mean, people are reaching out to me on social media. They love Solve It for Kids. We've had such amazing guests, and I can't wait. Let me spin the wheel. I can't wait to find out what we're talking about today.
Well, hold on. Before we spin the wheel, don't we have to recognize our new team members?
Oh, yes, yes. We have to give those shout-outs. Who are we shouting out to today?
Well, today we have two.
Ooh.
So, welcome to the Solve It for Kids team, Samantha and Akeem. We are happy to have you as part of our team.
Hey, Samantha and Akeem. That's awesome. Jennifer, how can kids join our Solve It for Kids team?
Well, it's really easy, Jed. All you have to do is go to our website, solveitforkids.com, and click on the link that says Become a Team Member. And we would love to have you join us because we'll give you shout-outs for your birthday. You get behind-the-scenes cool tips and peeks into what happens with our guests on board. And you might even be able to submit a question to them.
That's awesome. Imagine, I mean, I'm looking at the guests that we have coming up. They're, like, amazing. Imagine being able to ask an aquanaut or an astronaut or, like, a nuclear physicist a question. That is so cool.
Yes, it is. I think so.
Yeah. All right, so can I spin the wheel now?
Yes, yes, yes. Spin the wheel.
How do we restore our natural connection to water?
Jennifer, how do we restore a connection with water? I don't even know how you can have a connection with, I mean, other than a hose, but that, I don't think that's what we're talking about.
No, this is a really cool connection with water, and we are going to learn all about that from our guest, Dr. Kelsey Leonard. She is a water protector and scientist, and she represents the Shinnecock Nation at the U.S. National Ocean Council. And welcome to the show, Dr. Kelsey.
Welcome. Thank you. I'm so happy to be here.
Now, what was that word you said when we welcomed you?
Yeah, tabutni. It means thank you in our Shinnecock language.
Tabutni. Did I say it right?
You did.
That's awesome. That's awesome. Hey, Jennifer, I you're a lot smarter than I am. So I know you said water scientist. You said Dr. Kelsey was a water scientist and a water protector. I get the scientist part, kind of, but I don't know what a water protector is.
Well, why don't we ask Dr. Kelsey, what is a water protector?
So I feel for us, a water protector is someone who takes their science, takes their research, and actually puts it into action. So to take all of the data that you're collecting, all of the research that you're doing, all of the wonderful work that you're creating, and giving it back to the community, and particularly in my case, giving it back to the water, so that you're working towards protecting the water and towards making sure that it's healthy and safe for future generations.
So how does this work? Is this something that you are, what kind of actions do you take to help protect the water?
Well, for me, I have research that I do, so, and that looks particularly at indigenous nations. Those are many nations who were here prior to European settlement. So prior to folks coming over from other parts of the planet to now live in what we call North America. So before that, there were thousands and thousands of indigenous nations that lived on what we call Turtle Island, North America. And we still exist today. So my research looks at how so many of those nations, particularly where I'm from in the northeast of the United States, as well as where I currently live here in the Great Lakes region of Canada, how our indigenous nations of these regions value water, consider water, relate to water, and ultimately, how do we as people, indigenous peoples in these regions, work to protect water? So as a scientist, I'm trying to look and see, okay, what are people doing and how are they protecting water? And how can we then translate some of those values and activities that those indigenous people are doing to better educate other non-indigenous people, newcomers to Turtle Island, as we like to call them, about our value system and what existed before they got here. So hopefully we can have safer water for everyone.
That's excellent. So Dr. Kelsey is here to help us answer the question, how do we restore our connection to water?
Yes. And I really believe that that question comes from my research and my experience working with other indigenous peoples of Turtle Island, particularly grandmothers and elders from our community, who when I started as a water scientist looking at how do we protect the water, how do we protect the Great Lakes, how do we protect our ocean, they said, well, we have to start with what we know, and we have to start with that original connection that we all have to water because we're born in it, and it nurtures us for our first 9 months living in the womb. And they really called that a natal connection to water. We're all born with a connection to water. But somewhere along the way, we lose that connection. Or at least they feel that we've lost that connection because we're not protecting the water. If we maintained that connection to water, then the water wouldn't be polluted. There wouldn't be plastics in our ocean. Everyone would have access to clean drinking water and sanitation. So for my work as a scientist, it's trying to then say, okay, well, the elders have said that we've lost this connection. How do we work to restore that connection?
It almost sounds like you are looking at water in a very different way than I kind of grew up looking at water. It almost sounds like you're looking at water as a living being.
Yes, that's a fundamental difference in my work from what I found between indigenous worldviews and the worldviews of others and newcomers to Turtle Island. Particularly, we often hear, oh, well, water's a resource. When I ask people, what is water, they often will say, oh, well, it's rain, it's a puddle, it's condensation, it's ice. But in indigenous communities, what we often hear is not what is water, but who is water. In the same way that I might ask you, who is your grandmother? Who is your auntie? Who is your sister? That fundamentally changes the questions that we ask, how we protect water, how we think about water. So yes, it's very much thinking of water as a living relation that we have a responsibility and a duty towards protecting.
So if you think about who is water, so what are you hoping to get kids or people to understand about water by asking that question that way?
Well, I think it's very much about getting folks to connect, right? It's difficult to say, how do we restore our connection to water when you think of water as an object, something for your own consumption, your own use, to benefit you as an individual. But when we say that water is alive and water has its own rights to exist and to be healthy and to be happy, that changes the way you might think about how you connect to water, not solely as something for your own individual use and benefit, but that you might go out and say, hi, water, how are you doing today? That you might actually go and look at the water close to you and say, okay, oh, well, there's all this litter. Why is this litter here? Why are we not taking care of this beautiful relation that's so close to my home? And if we start to fundamentally make that shift in our thinking, that could really change our whole dynamic across the planet and the major crises that we are facing when it comes to our waters being threatened.
I love the way you put that. And absolutely, if I'm thinking about water the same way I think about my grandmother, boy, oh boy, I'm going to be so much more careful about what I put into it and about what's going on with it.
Exactly. And I think the other takeaway is that restoring our connection to water is also about restoring our connection to each other, because water connects us all. What you put into your water is eventually going to impact my water because of the hydrological system is all connected. Science shows us that. So where our thinking has sort of put up these walls or blocks that we can't see how the water connects us all is also something that I'm trying to address as a scientist to say, well, how can we change these ways of thinking? How can we do better?
So can you give some specifics that you are doing here to try and change the views of water?
Yes. Well, one of the activities that I've been working on with Indigenous community members here in the Great Lakes region are water walking and water walks. So what I've been doing is trying to document this particular activity as a form of what I call water citizenship. We all can be water citizens, which means we all can fulfill our responsibility to protect the water. And one activity that I found that example of water citizenship, which is everyday people taking up their responsibility to protect the water, are water walks. And these water walks were started by a group of Anishinaabe Kwe grandmothers. So that those are grandmothers from the Great Lakes region who are part of the Anishinaabe nations. There's many nations that fall under that grouping. And they decided, after a prophecy was told to them in the early 2000s, that an ounce of water would cost as much as an ounce of gold.
Wow.
And their ceremonial leader who had that prophecy said to them, so what are you going to do about it? And everyone left that ceremonial space and went back to their home territories. And one grandmother in particular, who I had the privilege of knowing in my life, was Josephine Mandamenba. And she got together with other grandmothers and Nokmises, and she asked them, what can we do? I've heard this prophecy from our ceremonial leader, and I think it's really important that we do something. And so they came together and they said, well, we need to, again, restore that connection. They didn't use that word at the time, but they said, we're lost. We don't know the water. We haven't actually gone to visit with the water in so many years. So they said, let's walk all of the lakes.
All of the lakes.
All of the Great Lakes. They started with Lake Superior, and they said, we're going to walk the lake to get to know it, to visit with it, to pray for it, to do ceremony with the lake, to understand how it's threatened, and hopefully that our prayers and our ceremony can start to restore not only our connection to the water, but start to heal the water based on our thousands of years of traditional knowledge. And so these groups of grandmothers and other community members came together, and they walked Lake Superior. And that one grandmother started what's now known as the Mother Earth Water Walk, Josephine Mandamenba, and she walked over all five of the lakes multiple times.
Oh, my gosh.
More than 36,000 kilometers.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah, that's not a small distance. Wow.
Not at all. So there's a wonderful book that I think we'll have referenced in the reading list for folks called The Water Walker. And it's her story about walking for the water. And I think that that's a really great example for one of the questions that I address as a scientist about how do we restore that connection. Well, it was finding that there are already wonderful people doing great work out there, and we just have to learn from them. We have to learn from other Indigenous people that have been and continue to protect the water for millennia.
Wow. Yeah, my mind is boggled. There's a river and a wetlands right next to my home, and I love going out there and walking it, you know, but after an hour or two, I'm exhausted. I can't imagine walking Lake Superior. I mean, my goodness.
Well, and the wonderful thing about the Water Walks is they are a community effort. Right? It's not just one person. Sometimes they're a relay style where one person walks for a portion and then another person will pick up.
Oh, okay, yeah.
But it is about that community. Right, and it is about staying for the length of the lake or the water body. It could be a river. There are a group of other water walkers under an organization called the Neve Walks, and they walk rivers predominantly in the United States, but they've done them all over the world. And that's the great thing about water walks. They've actually been done all over the world, and you can do them right close to you for the water body that's closest to your home.
So while you're doing the water walk, I'm assuming they are looking at the lake or the river and maybe assessing what's happening, but also kind of feeling it, right? Like maybe they get a sense of calm looking at the water. I mean, is there something specific they're looking for while they're walking?
So a water ceremony, each walk does start with a water ceremony that is connected to the Indigenous teachings of the community closest to that water. And with those water ceremonies, there is water that's collected, and you actually carry water from the water that you're walking for throughout the walk. And so what many folks will say who participate in the water walks is that you can feel a heaviness to the water. You can feel different types of emotional connections when you're carrying the water, and sometimes they feel that connects to the current health of the water. So, for example, there have been stories told of some water walkers who were walking with water from a polluted area. The pail that the water is carried in was very heavy. It wasn't like the day before where it didn't feel as heavy or as emotionally draining on their system. And they feel that is very much connected to how the water is feeling based on contamination or pollution. And I think that that's really important as we start to think about restoring our connection to water, when we start to think about water quality from a scientist perspective, not just necessarily being around the level of a word called contaminants, the level of pollutants or types of pollution that might be in the water, but also thinking about what types of healthy things are in the water that make the water happy. When we don't have those types of things, how does that make the water feel, and maybe how does that make us feel? And for example, the water's probably not very happy when it doesn't have a lot of fish in it. And we're not very happy when the water doesn't have a lot of fish in it, because that we usually rely on the water to get those fish and to feed us and to nurture us. And so water walks help us to understand how the water's feeling and how we're feeling in connection to it.
I love that image of the water being happy.
Yes.
What kind of things can we do to make the water around us happy?
Well, I think the first thing I would say is to get to know the water closest to you. Even if you live in a desert, maybe it's you have a groundwater well that's close to your home. Maybe it's going out during a rainstorm, as long as you're safe, you know, go with parents. But going out and getting to know the water closest to you, maybe it's a creek, maybe it's a river, maybe it's a lake, go with parents and be safe. But I think the biggest thing is that folks don't even know the water, the fresh water closest to them, or salt water, because because I'm a bit of a saltwater baby. So, but we just have become so stuck in our homes, partially because of our current experiences, but even prior to, any type of stay at home orders or lockdowns, folks were not recognizing where their water was coming from. Sometimes, you know, we ask kids, you know, hey, where does your water come from? They say the tap. And no, it doesn't.
Just like the money comes from the ATM, you just go and it's right there, you know?
Yes, we've just gotten to be a society that is so disconnected, right? Just when I ask you, where does your water come from? And you say the tap, to me, that says that's an example of disconnection. Yeah. So then as a scientist, I say, okay, what type of science communication failure is happening there that we haven't properly educated folks that, okay, yeah, our water doesn't actually come from the tap. It comes from here. And I think a big part of that is just not knowing the water body closest to you. But we have so many free tools available to us now. You can go onto Google and, you know, pinpoint your house and then zoom out and you can find the water, the natural water body that's closest to your home. And depending on the climate that you live in, it might be groundwater. It might be a big rainstorm that's coming through. But I think that's a big part of building that connection.
Yeah. You know, when I grew up in a house that had a creek in our backyard. So, my most favorite memories as a kid were spending hours and hours along the creek. I mean, we knew that creek inside and out. We were down there all the time. We used to catch frogs and tadpoles. And, I did many science projects on paramecium that lived in the water. And we actually, cause the creek would run through the whole town. We had a very small town. We followed the creek, like through most of the town one day. Of course on our bikes, and my mom was like, you know, this was way before cell phones. So it was like, be back by 4. So we only got as far as we could. So I think for my whole life, I have really loved water. Now I live in Florida and there is an ocean about 6 miles from us. And we go down to the beach a lot just to walk along it. And the feeling of calmness that you get from going to the beach and just watching the ocean, I think is amazing. And I'm wondering if this is something that the water walkers experience themselves, just walking alongside the water.
Yes, I think that there are so many emotions that water can give to us as human beings. We're most attuned or most aware of the feeling of calmness when we go to the water. Right? But we're also being a bit, there's a phrase called self-selective, in the sense that we're picking spots that have already been cultivated for that calmness, right? So a nice, pretty beach with chairs set out or that you can have your towel out. But there's so many other spaces where maybe the water isn't as pristine or the land around the water isn't as pretty because people haven't taken care of it. So in the same way that you can feel that calmness when you go by a water that's been well taken care of, you can also feel senses of sadness and feelings of harm or discomfort when you go by water that's not being taken care of. And for the water walkers, they feel all of those emotions during a water walk.
Wow. Yeah, it sounds like a water walk. It can be this amazing thing, but it sounds too like you could come out of it feeling kind of upset or challenged.
Yes, you definitely can. You have to grapple with tough emotions during a water walk, but also beautiful emotions too, yes. Right? Because you get to see something that maybe you've never seen before, or get senses of calmness that you've never had before. But you can be challenged with difficult feelings, maybe anger or frustration or sadness. I feel like Disney made a movie about this, but with how we need to learn to deal with our emotions, and the water can be a really good teacher for that. But I think also when you are going out, you have to be aware that you might have those different emotions that are challenged, that come up, emotions that you didn't think would come up before. And then you have to know what to do with those emotions. And so it is good for you to have some time for reflection, to come home and to think about, what did I learn from the water today? What did I learn from my visit to the water today? And then once you've thought about that, maybe written a few things down, a few words down, even just writing down the emotions that you felt visiting the water, then my challenge to you would be to ask yourself, what can I do for the water? Because if I'm feeling those emotions, the water's probably feeling those emotions. We were having that connection that allowed me to feel what the water was feeling. So if I'm feeling angry, what do I do just in my normal life to feel happy or to do away with that anger? Maybe it's saying a prayer. Maybe it's telling a funny joke. There's ways that you do.
Drawing
a picture, yeah.
You know?
There's so many different ways that we deal with our emotions. So when you ask yourself, what can you do for the water? Do something like that. If you went to the water and you felt calmness, maybe that inspires you to draw a picture of that experience. That's good for the water too. If you went to the water and you saw so much litter and trash and that just made you so angry, well, go with your parents or with someone and do a beach cleanup, do a river cleanup. Take a trash bag, make sure you have all the safety protocol and safety items that you need to do it safely, but then go and clean some of that up. And you'll feel better, and the water will feel better.
That's true.
Yeah. I'm wondering, Dr. Kelsey, I love what you're saying, but it's not something that we hear a lot.
Yes.
And I'm wondering if a kid goes to school or is in a Zoom classroom and starts talking to kids or the teacher about, hey, let's do a water walk and talk to the water and feel all the... I'm thinking that there might be kids in the classroom that like make fun of them and say, oh, that stupid water doesn't talk to you and doesn't feel emotions. How can we help our kids kind of have the courage to kind of push through those you know, feelings that they may, or opinions that they may run into?
Well, I definitely think it's something that we can work with schools and work with teachers to implement in their classrooms so we don't put that burden on children, right? They shouldn't have to feel that. We should be giving them opportunities to explore and to connect to nature and to connect to water. And so there's a wonderful program that was actually started by an elementary school teacher named Peter Cameron in honor of Josephine Mandelman Bob, and Milk in the Step That Walked All the Lakes. Out of Thunder Bay, Ontario, Canada, and the program is called the Junior Water Walker. And he has a website that provides curriculum on how to implement the Junior Water Walkers program. It's actually in, I think, over 200 classrooms around the world. You can go and sign your classroom up through his website, and you can see their Google Map. And so what I would say to someone listening today that's really interested in wanting to restore their connection to water, maybe even have a water walk for your school or classroom, is to partner with the Junior Water Walkers, go sign up through them, and you really will have a wonderful template of how to do this and do it well in your community.
I love that. That's fantastic, because now you've given kids something to do, because, you know, the kids of today actually are very smart, I think, and they want to do things to help with the environment and to help with the communities. And this right here is a great example of something that they can do. And the other thing I want to say is, you know, most of us, when we think scientists, and we've talked about this before in the show, we think, oh, this is like a person who just goes to school and learns stuff and, you know, goes out and takes samples. But you're asking people to expand their thinking and the way they look at water as a scientist. And I think that that is incredible.
Yeah.
Well, thank you very much. But I think that's where we have to start, because to be a great scientist and to have scientific innovation in our world, we have to ask the right questions.
Yes.
And our questions come from our thinking and our worldview. And if we're not starting on the same page and understanding how each of us may think differently and have different cultural values that inform that thinking, it's really difficult for us to ask the right questions later on for scientific innovation.
I love that. And again, Jennifer, so many of our guests have come on and talked about the fact that one of the ways to solve a problem is to ask questions.
Yes. Yes, absolutely. Yes. I mean, we get that all the time. And we all know that science is fluid. It's not this is the way it works. We learn all the time about new things. This right here was, I never thought about thinking about how water feels. Like when I was, again, when I was growing up around the creek, I was there and I know that I loved it, but I never really thought about it. We actually cleaned up garbage every time. We just did it because, you know, there shouldn't be garbage. But now I want to do a water walk. Wow. Doesn't that sound fun?
Well, and water walks come in all sizes, all types. It's really about, it's great to do it with other people, but you can also do it by yourself. As long as you're old enough. And I think, you know, the wonderful thing though is even if it's a puddle after a large rainstorm or a river or a lake or an ocean nearby, going and being with the water, visiting with the water, having a conversation, you may feel out of sorts because it's something you've never done before, but I promise that after doing it, you'll feel really new emotions, emotions that you haven't felt before. And it's a very powerful experience that is good for your health and for the water's health.
Yeah.
Well, I know, you know, as you're talking, one of the things I remember is how much my kids loved jumping into puddles when they were kids. So maybe those babies who are jumping into puddles, they know something that we've forgotten.
Yes.
That's definitely what the grandmothers have said to me. Somehow along the way, we lost our joy of jumping in puddles. And we need to get more of that back.
Absolutely. Yes, I remember doing that as a kid. In fact, it's raining right now where I am, so maybe I'll just go outside after the podcast and jump in the water.
There you go.
So we ask all of our guests to give our listeners a challenge. So what would your challenge be to our listeners?
So my challenge would be, first, to ask yourself every day, what have I done for the water today? And in doing that, I would then say one thing that you could do would be to go and find the water body closest to you, so the water that's closest to your home, and go and visit with it. That could be to go and sit by a creek or sit by a lake, find the well closest to your home, and say something. It could be a prayer. It doesn't have to be. It could be, I hope you have a great day today, water. It could be, you might have some, depending on your cultural background, you might have some medicines or a gift you want to leave for the water. Maybe it's a shell, or maybe it's a really beautiful rock that you found. In our indigenous cultures, we often will leave what we call sema, tobacco, down for the water as a gift and a prayer and an honoring to say thank you for all that you do to sustain us, because in our teaching, water is life. Without it, we don't exist on this planet, and the planet doesn't exist. So that would be my challenge, would be to go and find the water closest to you and get to know it. Visit with the water.
So, listeners, that's what we want you to do. You can either take a picture of the water that you visited or draw a picture. And we would love to see this and share this with Dr. Kelsey. So with your parents' permission, you can tag us on our Instagram and Twitter, which is @KidsSolve, or you can go ahead and email it to us through our website, which is solveitforkids.com. And that's where we're going to have Dr. Kelsey's, we'll have the link to the Junior Water Walkers. And also, can you tell us a little bit about the activity that you left for them on there too?
Yes. So there is a great indigenous scholar and game developer. So there are some really cool indigenous folks that are thinking into the future and developing digital games from an indigenous perspective. This scholar, her name is Elizabeth LaPrince, and she created a wonderful activity tool called Anishinaabe Ways of Knowing the Bay, water. So in various Anishinaabe languages, the word for water is nabe. And so if you go to that activity sheet, there's things in different fields, maybe it's science or geography or math or literature, all different ways where you can learn more about nabe, about water, from an Anishinaabe perspective, so from the people of the Great Lakes, the original peoples of Turtle Island.
That's amazing. I'm so excited. I've already looked at the activities. They're really cool, so go check them out.
Well, I want to say tabutni, Dr. Kelsey, for being with us today.
Thank you. Thank you. Tabutni so much. And we also say during these difficult times, winish. So we hope that you are well and that you are staying safe and healthy.
Yes. Thank you for being on our show, Dr. Kelsey.
Jennifer, that was an amazing conversation. Dr. Kelsey's just like fantastic. I learned so much. I'm going out and I'm going to take a water walk today.
Me too. I'm with you. And we want all of you to go out and do water walks as well. And you can take a picture on your water walk or maybe draw something afterwards with what you saw or what you learned. And then if your parents give you permission, send us those pictures either through our website. You can email us or tag us on our social media on Twitter and Instagram @KidsSolve. We would love to see your pictures.
Absolutely. And once again, Jennifer, if somebody wants to become a team member here at Solve It for Kids, what should they do?
They should go to our website, solveitforkids.com, and click on Be a Team Member.
That's awesome. Well, Jennifer, this has been incredible. I learned so much. I'm like becoming, as we say up here in Boston, I'm becoming like wicked smart listening to the show.
That is the idea. And we hope all of our listeners are really enjoying learning all about these amazing scientists, engineers, and experts and artists. Just keep listening because we have more awesome people on the way.
Hey, see you next time on Solve It for
Kids. Solve It for Kids.